terms of the money, those procedures and amended that, that we conduct our work in this way, going through the process of dealing with the fiscal framework and the revenue proposals and the minister's budget speech, as it was 86, and referred to those committees. Welcome to the Honourable Minister and Deputy Minister, the team, the Director General, Mr. Vusili, where's DG? He will be here shortly, I saw him outside. The rest of the Treasury team that's here, I call them the A-team. I call them the A-team in this difficult circumstances. We also have here honourable members, members from provincial legislators. I recognise and I saw the Northern Cape Honourable Dave Malusi, chairperson of finance in the legislature, and his staff that he brought with. Free State, Mr. Honourable Niels van Rooyen, he knows this premises very well. With his staff, Eastern Cape, where's the Eastern Cape? I saw the Eastern Cape here. There is Eastern Cape. The King's doing very well in rugby. Any other Limpopo? Where's Limpopo? We're coming to them. Limpopo is here. Gauteng is here. Any other province? We can't hear. Northwest. Northwest. Anyone else from my province? We recognize the respect. Yes, we recognize the respect. Very welcome to all of you, ladies and gentlemen, all the members. We're going to deal with this meeting in a business-like fashion. We're not going to take a presentation. You've listened to the Honourable Minister yesterday, listened to the budget speech. There were other inputs made over radio and television. There was a breakfast show this morning where we watched the Minister answer questions. The country is quite at ease with this budget. South Africa is quite happy. We're going to give the Honourable Minister the opportunity to make his input as the political head of National Treasury, and after that we go straight into the questions. But before that, we had the person serving this committee since 2009, called Mr. Nkwetong Kizwe, that was brutally murdered last week, and the funeral was on Sunday. I sent a letter on behalf of the South Finance family to his parents to pass on our condolences. He did excellent work. He started as a content advisor, and he ended up as a manager over several committees, including this committee. So I just want to share that with you. We've lost a dear colleague in terms of the committee staff. Let his soul rest in peace. Honourable Minister, you may address the joint sitting of this committee.
Thank you, Chairperson. Perhaps we should observe a moment's silence for the colleagues that we've lost.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. With the permission of the Minister, just to add that some colleagues from the appropriation did attend the funeral.
Thank you, Honourable Gwani. Thank you.
Chairperson, as you pointed out, I'm sure most colleagues have read most of the material. There's a lot of material, so I don't want to say all of the material. And generally, what we announced yesterday has been very well received. If we're looking at highlights, the highlights are on the screen, just to remind you, are the growth numbers for 2013, 14, and 15. What we think inflation might be, below the 6% upper level. Moderate employment growth, which is what we've enjoyed for much of this last 3 years, all of which we know is inadequate at this point in time. There's certainly the employment and growth numbers, and you've heard us say very clearly that growth needs to be higher. You've also heard us say that it's time to give effect to what we call repositioning of South Africa. We've got all of the plans in place. I think if we have to have a national Indaba, there'll be by and large agreement with many of the things that we need to do. And key to this, in my view, is in view of the fact that the private sector is the major part of our GDP and economy, how we get the private sector to begin to play its rightful role. Members must remember me saying a few years ago, we're reporting from G20 meetings, that one of the phenomena noticed by the IMF across the globe is how the public sector had to step in to support growth and employment across the globe once the recession made its impact. And at each of the meetings we go to two or three times a year, we hear this refrain that the handover from the public sector to the private sector hasn't happened. And so how we get more investment in the economy, the manner in which we utilize the opportunities that are available to us as South Africans and to South African businesses, the manner in which we could work together as business, labor, and government, and indeed citizens of this country, are all going to be important tips as we go forward. The second component is the budget framework. Just to repeat, you know that we're losing some 16 billion rand potentially in revenue when we get to the end of this one. And again, to repeat what the Commissioner of SARS has been saying, that the end of the month is not the 31st of March this year. For tax collection purposes, the 28th of March, because the Easter weekend falls over the last few days of this month, which makes that task a little bit more difficult, but also means we lose a bit of revenue in the process. So there's a huge appeal, which I hope the committees will support, that all those that are due to pay tax should do so by the 28th of March, not the 31st of March. But we have what we might call an automatic increase in the deficit. That was beyond our control, because these numbers only became clearer in the middle of January once we knew what the revenue information was for the end of December. The deficit, as we go further into the three-year cycle, is one which we are still managing in a way in which we continue with our medium-term fiscal consolidation. Our target is also to get to 3.1% in the outer years, but major adjustments have had to happen, as you've heard. Adjustments in expenditure, adjustments in terms of moving monies around from underperforming areas to performing areas, or rescheduling the spending of money in order that we manage our expenditure over a longer period than we would have normally. We've also changed the amounts that we've allocated to the contingency reserve. And what this means is that in the outer years, particularly when a new administration comes in 2014, if the current trend continues, they might not, the new administration won't have as much fiscal space as the normal contingency amounts allow for new policy initiatives. And I repeat, unless we have different growth and revenue scenario at that time, which is quite probable if our optimism plays itself out. The other adjustment we've made as part of this process is that where in October we thought expenditure will be 2.9% in terms of real growth, it's now down to 2.3%. And as you know, we're introducing two major expenditure reviews so that apart from the reprioritizing, saving, haircutting, and so on that we've been doing, we now go deeper into certain areas of government expenditure, get better feel for what's going on, and look for opportunities for greater efficiency in expenditure. The tax proposals, all of you looked very happy yesterday, so I'm not going to repeat and make you happy again. The relief that we're giving on income tax is in front of you. The package that we are trying to put together for youth unemployment is a comprehensive one, which includes the government programs, EPWB, CWP, and the programs in under rural development, amongst others. And is also reinforced by training and vocational training being added to the package. But the incentive also operates through a tax system, both for the youth that we want employed and also for people who would be employed within these special economic zones. The actual design and so on is still to be determined, and the concern of labor in relation to the substitution effect will be taken into account in the design. There's some tax relief for small businesses. I wish we could have done more, but didn't quite have the fiscal space to be more generous than we were. But it's certainly an area that we will continue to look at and review. The spending plans are all in front of you, and although you'll see different percentages of growth in different areas, all of those growth numbers still fit in with the overall envelope that we actually determine. And the spending is a fair balance between support for economic growth and programs, the social wage, which is an important component of our spending, and infrastructure, particularly the infrastructure that we fund from the fiscal, and there's other details that are in the budget review. So in sum, I would say that we've found the right balance between consolidation and growth promoting approaches at a fiscal level. Secondly, that in terms of overall fiscal management, we're still within the kind of parameters that we would have worked, like to have worked under. We would have preferred that the events of last year would not have happened, that we would not have had the 16 billion rand loss in revenue, and we would have had a slightly different picture and one more consistent with what we thought we would have at the time of the MCBPS. But we don't control all events, and some shocks you've got to learn to absorb and actually work with. But most importantly, we've got to direct our focus not just to the expenditure side, but also on the revenue side, and therefore on the growth side of this equation, and get that right for the country. So, Chairperson, I'm going to stop there. Virtually all the Deputy Directors General are here, as is the Director General, who was delayed a few minutes because he had to make a call on my behalf. And we are available for your comments and questions. Thank you.
Thank you to the Honourable Minister Colin for that input. I recognize the Deputy Chairperson of the FFC, Mr. Bongani Kumal, and then also welcome to the Honourable Members from the Standing Committee of Appropriations, yes, quite a few of them. This is in the finance family gathering. In terms of the documentation circulated, Honourable Members, we've got some homework to do this weekend to prepare ourselves for the public hearings, and then next week also the Division of Revenue presentations will be done on Wednesday for the Appropriations Committees. Questions? Honourable...
No, I just wanted to add on your earlier remarks when we opened the meeting that honorable members, it will be important just to remind you that this is a briefing by the minister and his team to a joint committee. It's not necessarily a presentation that will go into all the other things that are going to be processed during the public debate and so on and so forth. And probably even presentation indicates that it is a briefing. So I thought I should just emphasize this point. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Dava. I've noted Honourable Harris. Just put up the hands again. Honourable Swart, number one. Kurnov. Swart, number two. Down there. Coming up this way, sorry, Dr. Mienge, Mr. Ross, Marvel Ross, in that order.
Thanks, Chair. Can I just, before I start, say that I seldom worked with anybody as competent and professional as Mr. Mkhize, so certainly the DA appreciates the moment that we took of silence and expresses our deep remorse at what happened. In the spirit of keeping it short, I have four quick questions. I think The minister was in a tight spot fiscally. I think we have a growth problem, which he's acknowledged, and if we're going to build up more fiscal space, it's going to require a sea change in our growth path, and the DA supports the minister in his efforts to get there. My first question is about the youth wage subsidy, what you call the youth tax employment incentive now, I think. I responded initially yesterday suggesting that it had been watered down, but I see, taking another look at the numbers, that I was probably mistaken. I called it watered down because I thought that the amount of funding had declined from around 1.6 billion down to 500 million. I suspect that that is now simply because it's going to be implemented sometime in this year, so this year's allocation will be relatively small and it will then scale up in the outer years, but I see it's still, the suggestion is that it's still 4 billion. Whereas the previous incarnation budgeted for in 2011 was 5 billion. What is the motivation for the decline from 5 to 4 billion? And what I understand detail hasn't been presented yet, but at a high level, what are the key differences between what was on the table in the 2011 budget and this model? Because the newspapers are speculating that the only difference is that this new youth wage subsidy will not be available to existing workers. But if I read the Treasury's document correctly in 2011, the idea that you did subsidize new existing workers is it eradicates the potential substitution for young workers. Why has Treasury changed the model if that was the logic in the initial design? And then obviously the question is, if the youth wage subsidy was not implemented in 2011 for various reasons, why are the political conditions different that we'll see it implemented now? What has changed between then and now? Secondly, on infrastructure, the National Development Plan, which I think the entire opposition is on record supporting, and we acknowledge and appreciate the fact that the budget has now been broadly aligned behind it, but it does on infrastructure say that we should be spending around 10% of GDP as the public sector on infrastructure. And I think given the backlog in infrastructure in the country, which the Department of Public Enterprises estimates at 1.5 trillion rand, would Treasury agree with that 1.5 trillion figure? And given that backlog, I see that the spending this year is, I think, 8% of GDP, and over the medium term it declines to 7% of GDP. I think a 30% shortfall from that NDP target is probably quite significant. Would you agree that we need to scale that up? And how can we get from 7% in the medium term up to 10%? Is it possible one option that one possible option what you apparently mentioned in the media briefing yesterday, because I haven't seen it in the documents, I may have missed it, that there's potential for equity deals in the Paris settlement. Is it an option now for this government to consider privatization or partial privatization or listings of various aspects of or entire state owned entities in order to fund infrastructure in similar ways to the Brazilians have done? And is that now a policy change? Because for the last few years it's clear that privatization has been totally off the table. Has that now changed? Thirdly, on debt, the rating agencies flagged this as a serious concern, all three of them, when they downgraded us. I remember saying this last year, and I think I said it the year before, when Treasury tells us that the debt is peaking at the outer year of the NCEF, we simply have to trust you. And in February last year, you told us debt was peaking in the outer year. Now we see it peaking in this outer year, therefore it clearly wasn't peaking last year. So I understand there's a long-term analysis coming. I wonder when this committee will be seeing that document. And how would you respond to the concerns of the rating agency, given that our total loan debt does appear to increase right through the NCEF, and there's no point at which it comes down? And then lastly, on the special economic zones, we warmly welcome the bolder packet of incentives. I'm interested what precipitated the change from Treasury, which historically resisted large headline tax breaks. And secondly, does the package, which approximately looks like, I think, a 15% income tax rate, a wage subsidy, a generalized wage subsidy, and accelerated depreciation on infrastructure, is that package competitive with other similar zones around the world? Thank you.
So
Steve Schwab.
Thank you, Chairman, and maybe just join our sentiments as well with Ms. McKees and express our sympathies as well. Minister, may we also commend you from our side for the budget, which has been widely welcomed, been described as brave and balanced, etc., and from our side we described it as prudent. And I'm sure you'll agree that a counter-cyclical, prudent approach is not austerity, and I think that's a very important message that we need to get out. And that brings me to the importance of our response. We as public representatives surely also have to take responsibility, as we do with the budget process, but be mindful of what we say, I would suggest. While constructive criticism is very important, I think how we say that and what we say is a very important element. As you know, we've been on record as expressing concern about the debt levels, but we appreciate the fact that the trade-off is that taxes were not increased. As far as the debt levels are concerned, can you give us an indication when we can expect the report that you alluded to in your speech on the fiscal sustainability from the long-term perspective? If we'd like to interrogate that. And then secondly, the vital role that the private sector plays, and you shortly alluded to that, and maybe you could just explain a little further how we can bring the private sector, as you indicated, that they would play a greater role, particularly when it comes to the nature of the investments, where one would prefer to see investment in research and development and innovation as opposed to the equity market. And then lastly, just on the issue of combating corruption, and you're very frank in your speech as to the difficulties experienced in that. There is progress made, and we look forward to the Chief Procurement Officer. From my side, as a member of the Justice Committee as well, I've for some time expressed the view that we need to capacitate some of our agencies better, particularly the SIU, the Special Investigating Unit. We noticed that you did give additional funds to the public protector, but is that something that one could also consider, even if, and I understand budgetary constraints, but the incredible effectiveness of the Special Investigating Unit, if one was to, for argument's sake, double their budget, surely it would also enable them to pursue that 30 billion rand a year that they indicated was the extent of the procurement fraud, or at least increase. And that is a budgetary issue, which I think I have raised before. Thank you very much, Chairperson. But all in all, well done, Minister. Thank you.
Honourable Nick Willenhoff.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. We add also our condolences and in the same breath, our congratulations to the Minister and the Treasury. I just want two questions. The one is, am I correct to assume that the projections for the debt ratio depends on inflation remaining relatively high? And if that is so, can we assume that the Reserve Bank will be happy with a CPI inflation of 5.5% over the next 3 years? And if they're happy, are we entering a new era of where inflation targeting will play a lesser role? That's the first question. And secondly, I think the budget speech was very brave. You need partners to make it work. We all know that. Can you give us some indication that you will get Labour to assist? Because that is an important aspect of being successful. Thank you.
Just on a lighter note, last time the Honourable Koornhof said he would pass on some cognac, but he didn't mention anything today.
No, thank you, Honourable Chair. Just a follow-up on the last question. Somewhere in the speech, the Minister raised the issue about on the regional integration, the issue about simpler rules and that addresses time and cost for doing business. It was not clear in terms of what the are you able to give some indication? Are we talking almost kind of two-tier system in terms of that particular aspect? And if it's so, what is the body language on the social partners around that particular strategy? The second one, in the speech somewhere on the regional integration, there's where you're saying you are going to be announcing the simpler rules. That addresses the time and cost in doing business. So the question really is in terms of that particular aspect. what is the kind of body language on social partners, because it gravitate, is it towards a kind of two-tier system, which is a kind of sticky issue. The second one is in relation to the 16 billion, the under-collection, the one that we speaks about revenue under-collection. Just a little maybe indication in terms of the factors that affected the, because normally the projection of SARS is over-collection, not necessarily under-collection. So this time around it's under. What are the factors that basically influence that? Is the looking forward in terms of even the tax disclosure plan that is coming that brought in quite a considerable amount of money. Going forward, are we looking at a shrinking of that base in terms of the collection or increasing?
In future get Swaziri to speak first because he's taken some of my thunder in the process. Thank you very much, Chair. Minister, he raised the question of the Chief Procurement Officer, which is a very good thing because it's a way of in which we will be able to combat corruption. But I wonder if you could maybe just elaborate more on how you see the functions of the Chief Procurement Officer and what the duties will be. Would be something like the old state tender board, and we would like to congratulate Mr. Brown on his appointment to this position. I know he's an excellent appointment to this position.
Honourable Leaf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Minister, thank you for being with us this morning. The question of infrastructure grants, in your speech on page 24, you referred to an improved system to improve the quality of spending, the application process of infrastructure grants is being revised. And you give, I think, what is an example of that revision, the submission of building plan 2 years ahead of implementation. When will we get a more detailed analysis or proposal with regard to those changes? Because I think provinces, if they read that, would be quite concerned as to what is going to be expected out of them if they're going to have to produce building plans 2 years in advance, which is quite a long time in advance. What are the other issues there? Mr. Minister, I'm not very good at arithmetic, but I've really baffled to establish how the figure of 10.4 billion in reprioritization savings and draw down on a contingency reserve, that figure was arrived at. But my problem is I don't know what your starting point was. Well, not quite so, because you can't reduce zero to minus 10.4. So that's where I battle a bit with that. Equally with the 7 billion personal tax relief, clearly there's been a bracket creep adjustment, there's been adjustment on the rebates and so on. And if that's how you get to the 7 billion, then I probably understand, except of course that most people get an increase in their salaries, inflation related I suppose. So I'm not sure that relief translates into real relief. But I'd be curious, I'm interested to know how that 7 billion was arrived at. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. But I'll start before I finish, Mr. Chairman. It's not a question. It's simply some support to the Commissioner of Inland. What do you call now? SARS Commission, anyway. I get disconcerted when I hear this word under-collection, because it kind of implies that SARS aren't doing their job properly, and I believe they're doing an excellent job. It's not as much an under-collection as it is. They're not doing their job properly. Can we put that on record, Minister?
Thank you, Honourable Leaf, Dr. Nguyenge. There it is.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chairperson, and also my greetings to the department as led by the Minister and the Deputy Minister. Let me first and foremost congratulate the Minister for a scrupulous and straightforward presentation that he made to the country pertaining to the location of funding. But I would like to maybe put 2 points of emphasis, one in relation to the monitoring and evaluation, especially on the implementation of infrastructure-related programs, the issue of capacity as well, especially at local government level. And lastly, it's a matter that relates to the municipal infrastructure grant, especially to young people's aspiration of having sport facilities where they live. I would appreciate if the Honorable Minister will actually ring-fence the allocation that is intended for that purpose. Otherwise, congratulations for this. Thank you.
Now that actually falls under the subject of appropriations, but we noted the question. Thank you, Dr. Renger. Mr. Honorable Ross.
Thank you, Chair. I was hoping to present my question after NERSA has made a determination on electricity prices. But I believe it will be at 2 o'clock this afternoon. Hopefully, is it not soon? Hopefully we will be getting closer to inflation-related prices. Just a comment, Honourable Minister, with regards to your speech yesterday, with regard to the pricing carbon. Will that also have an effect on the electricity pricing? Because eventually Eskom will also perhaps lower that down to consumers in their prior application to NERSA in future. Fortunately, that's a problem for 2015. But I'd just like to have your views with regard to the possibility that eventually consumers will have to pay for pricing carbon. If it's added to the prop of Eskom, how will that eventually flow out? I think it will be filtered down to the consumers to pay that in terms of their pricing application once again. My second comment is just with regard to a concern in terms of funding our infrastructure investment, is that Marianne Roberts indicated in the course of the year that since the World Cup, not a single tender has been issued to companies with regards to the infrastructure build. That was very negative in terms of the coordination with the public sector. What is your view on this? Is it true? Do you have any knowledge with regards to that? And then the role of the Development Bank of South Africa, who initially said that they will be championing the infrastructure programs and will be a center of excellence in as far as eradicating backlogs in municipalities. We also have seen that there's a new role for the UBSA, accelerating investment into the SADC region. Of course, I assume that will be a strategy to promote growth. We support that. But also, taking the backlog that my honorable colleague Harris has mentioned of 1.5 trillion rand in infrastructure, our focus on the municipalities and especially where it's falling apart in certain parts of the country, where we see huge backlogs in terms of infrastructure. Do we still have our focus on the role of the DBSA with regards to municipalities? And then lastly, sir, just a comment on the rating agency Standard & Poor's. Last night had an interview on television, and what they said in the final analysis that, yes, they are concerned about the 16.3 billion shortfall. The deficit has widened to 5.2, they are concerned with it, but in terms of current downgrades, not yet, respect on the downside. Just comment, your comment with regards to this. Thank you for the opportunity.
Honourable members, anyone I missed on this side? No. When? Trouble up? Yeah.
Thank you, Jefferson. Thanks for affording me the opportunity. Let me start by acknowledging, rather thanking the budget speech yesterday on a number of things that the Minister is pronouncing so far. Minister, I would want to find out around the issues of the NDP. It has been said very well by yourself that, you know, the NDP served as a budget point of departure when we do the budget. So how effective are you going to ensure that government departments and agencies would align their planning and expenditure to the NDP itself, since, of course, the NDP should shape the resources allocation for the 2013-2014? Secondly, the 2013-2014, the attitude with credit rating agencies thus far We need to make them believe that definitely government has got commitment to its financial blueprint at this point. But to what, how far can we really push it with this budget speech that we've done so that we don't experience sort of probably downgrading from the rating agencies themselves? The decision to reduce spending, you know, it comes after an upward revision for the 2012 and 2013 budget on fiscal year. So I would want to find out really your interpretation around this reducing of the spending of the money to say that, you know, are we reducing the money that we are spending because it's the money that we have? Or rather, is the money that we don't have that we are reducing around the issues of spending, considering the fact that we need to consider the infrastructure rollout. So how do we really balance the act around that? Lastly, the issue of currency, Minister, just to gather your thought around on the fact that, you know, the importing activity has become very expensive from where we are sitting, but also our exporting activity not necessarily in keeping up on the basis that, of course, our rent is not, it's not very strong. So I would want to find out, therefore, around issues of the currency itself, how, therefore, do we control the issues around specifically on the import, considering the infrastructure that we need to be rolling out. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Members, we will over this weekend have interactions with people outside. It's very important to tell them where we come from since 1994. In 1994, the total revenue was 112.4 billion rand. The expenditure, 137 billion rand, 137. The debt service cost was 24.1 billion. 48% of GDP. If you measure where we are today, if you read the State of the Nation address of last year, Honourable President outlined what happened. So to bring this together, I just want to give you that picture, your picture. Honourable Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Harris, I don't know where you see these numbers on allocations for the incentive, because the number of 5 billion was mentioned in the context where we anticipate. Remember this, Honourable Members, there's been a lot of confusion in this area, because 5 billion was interpreted to mean 5 billion in concrete land terms was set aside for what was then called a subsidy. What in fact was in print was that this was a tax expenditure of 5 billion. So if the scheme begins to get off the ground, we will collect 5 billion rand less in taxation. So currently, the details of the design are not available. And so we've mentioned it in the budget review and in the budget speech, in order that for appropriation purposes, perhaps later in the year, it's on the map. And at this stage, we can't talk about differences between A and B, either in design terms or in so-called allocation terms, but there's no allocation. It will be a tax loss the minute it actually comes into effect and legislation is passed in Parliament.
Sorry to interrupt the Minister. I just want to point for clarity that on page 50, there's a reference to employee tax incentive under tax loss proposal. That's what I'm referring to. I might be wrong.
Yeah, no, that's a difference. Page 60. That's probably the SEZ one. No.
Which page? 60.
60, yes.
In the budget review.
On the budget review, impact of tax proposal, so it's tax loss summary under okay. Tax income, employment tax incentive.
Yeah, but that's not necessarily the youth incentive. These are all employment incentives. So whether it's a learnership scheme or the SEZ scheme or if this comes into being. So that's an estimate that we're putting in for now. But we will come back to you once we have a more concrete feel for when implementation actually occurs. But thank you for pointing the table out. So let me talk about what is the difference. You must treat the incentive as a product of a dynamic process that started in NEDLAC, where what has happened through that process is now we have a package of initiatives that's outlined on page 23 of the review. We don't want you to repeat that package, it's there. And what is good about the package is that it brings together different dimensions of training, of the public sector programs, of what the private sector could actually do, and how we relate that to even programs like ICAP as well, which is mentioned on that page. What changed in political conditions? Nothing that I'm aware of, except that the dialogue in the Netherlands process has produced an outcome. And I think there's a recognition that we need to find each other in a constructive way to solve an important problem that the country is confronted with. On the question of the NDP and the percentage invested on infrastructure, the way we get to 10% clearly is that we need to continue to make the shift from consumption to investment. We've started the process, we've stated the intent, we're gradually moving in the direction that we're talking about, and I suppose what you still see is that the bigger part of overall investment that takes place in the economy still comes from the public sector, broadly defined. That the fiscus plus the public entities that are aligned to or belong to the state in some way. You talk about the question of privatization. That language is not something that we use, nor is there any intent, as I pointed out in that press conference, to move in that direction. And the point we clarified was that when you are in a constrained resource environment, you've got to ask yourselves, as we are asking ourselves, tough questions about how do you find funding for the various things that you want to do. So, and some of the answers that we provide to later questions from honorable members will elucidate this point as well. So we ask questions like, is a particular program that's allocated X amount going to use up all X amount? Are they using it at the rate that they should be using it up? Is it possible to reschedule a particular area of activity? In other words, something that you wanted to complete in 2 years, can you now complete it in 3 years? So you smooth the curve of expenditure in some ways. If you want to support a particular, let's say guarantees, should your guarantees be directed towards entities A or B or X and Z, depending on your priorities at a particular point in time and what your overall contingency liabilities in the state are? Are there assets that you hold, let's call it a piece of land, for example, somewhere, that you want to continue to hold? Or for development purposes, can the value of that land be made better use of if that money is utilized to build houses or install infrastructure somewhere? So all we're doing is asking some tough questions of ourselves, and the aim of the tough questions is to mobilize resources which can be deployed for particularly infrastructure investment purposes, but also other development objectives as well. Your questions on the debt issue and ratings agencies, I asked the Director General, who is very friendly with ratings agencies, to answer your question. On the question of the long-term fiscal plan, it's finished, the first draft. We're going through various cabinet processes, and as soon as we've concluded that, we'll certainly bring it to you. And we're very mindful of the fact that it is you that asked us to get to initiate the process. So just give us another, say, month or two, and we'll try and process that and get back to you. SEZ, what changed in the National Treasury? Nothing's changed. What changed is that we recognize that we, like we offer incentives to the motor industry, we offer incentives to the textile industry, we offer depreciation allowances to anybody who invests in other forms of investment. We've got to ask ourselves, what else can we do as a government to incentivize investment in the right things, to make these SEZs work, to improve our competitiveness, and to increase exports, for example. So that's the product, largely initiated by the DTI, and in collaboration with ourselves, we actually evolved the package that you have. Is it competitive compared to other jurisdictions? Depends what you mean. There are some countries in the world that give you 10-year tax holidays, for example. I don't think we are in a position to do that. So we will live with what we are comfortable with and still designed in a sufficiently attractive way. And we have a lot more to offer in various areas like business services and so on. And as I think Mr. Swart pointed out, number two, that we've got to be careful what we say in the public domain, although the public is listening to us today. Number one, okay. Number one or two, depending on whose perspective it is. And you're telling me the old one, so I don't want to get into that today. Because, as I said to ourselves before, colleagues, we've got to top up South Africa, and that's not just the job of government. And I've also mentioned many times in debates, both in this chamber and elsewhere, that you must differentiate between political debates and polemic on the one hand and national interest on the other hand. And often we get it wrong. But we can talk about that on another occasion. When who was going to offer what? Mr. Kurunov. Okay, so we're going to remember that. Mr. Swart, 102. Countercyclical prudence versus austerity, I think it's a point that you make very well. And remember that in the plans that we've put forward to the budget, we are still talking about a real expenditure growth of 2.3%. And we are very clear that the social wage, which is so well captured in chapter 6 of the budget review, is something that we can't afford to damage in any kind of way. And we know any situation where we are required to do that. Furthermore, if anybody wants proof of the damage that austerity does, you can look around the world. I won't mention any particular country. You can certainly see the social damage, the damage to the social fabric, to the morale of ordinary folk, the belief that the rich get away with it and the ordinary middle classes and working classes are deprived of the same sort of benefits. But more importantly, that austerity is not the way to get to growth. Is becoming quite evident. And so, whatever, we're grappling with growth-related issues. And many of us have been arguing within the G20 context that both at a global level and elsewhere, we've got to start asking the question, how do we collaborate with one another to develop a global growth and jobs formula, if you like, or strategy that each of us actually contributes to. I've covered your issues about what we say, the fiscal plan, the private sector playing a greater role in investment. An economy will grow partly because government makes efforts to contribute to the fiscus. Government invests in the economy, particularly in infrastructure and other enabling areas that will increase the potential growth of a particular economy. But for the rest, if the private sector is entrepreneurship, risk-taking ability and risk calculations, and the willingness to back itself and its country, that actually shapes a growth agenda. And what we are saying is that if we want to break through the 3% barrier again, and indeed the 4% barrier, we're going to have to work as a team. And all of us have to come to the party to make this work. We can't point to one point finger at the other and say, it's your job to do X and Y, and I can sit quietly and continue to criticize. That won't happen. You've heard me say this many times over. On the question of corruption, the CPO as an officer and as an office will have both, if you like, short-term objectives and longer-term objectives. But also you will have allied agencies who will be part of the broader program to get more control over procurement practices in government. So you've heard the announcement that SARS is looking at a number of businesses that have benefited from the state, have received money from the state, but are not tax compliant. Now, we want the commissioner to, in fact, deploy a lot more people. Ensure that a lot more businesses are covered a lot more quickly and put under the scrutiny of auditors to establish how many people who actually benefit from business with the state are actually compliant in tax terms. You can't benefit from the state legitimately or illegitimately and still not pay tax. That's a practice that we can't allow. So those are that getting a group of analysts who are able to monitor transactions virtually on a daily basis is the goal that we would have within the next few months, and where it is relevant to begin to intervene and stop payment on a transaction if it doesn't look too legitimate is the kind of situation that we'd like to be in. We also say to you that the system as a whole needs to be rejigged or restructured. We gave you an example where in a particular province, one department has some 300 points at which decisions are made on procurement. It's very hard to monitor the activity that goes on. The level of transparency and accountability is weak. You need fewer hubs where those decisions are made in order that you can have better management over those processes. So that, amongst many other things, are part of the revamp process as well. But finally, you can have as many CPOs as we like, but if the culture in a society, and in particular, remember, on every single one of these transactions, there's a business person on the other side. And the focus, both in the media and elsewhere, is only on what government does. And you're going to hear me saying this repeatedly. Let's start focusing on the business side, because it is business that benefits, that overprices, and benefits from that overpricing. It's business that takes 100 million rand but delivers 50 million rand worth of a product. Government doesn't do that. Government collaborates maybe with somebody in government in paying the money that they shouldn't actually pay over. So thirdly, and much more importantly, we as a society must take a tough stand on corruption. It must become really passé, and those who engage in this activity must be treated as outcasts. The Deputy Minister has got a very nice, simple example that he uses to illustrate how greed gets you into trouble. So I'm going to ask him to talk about it in a moment. Capacitating the SIU and so on, I'll ask Andrew Thompson to look at the allocations in this particular area. But we do our best wherever we can. But remember that the only thing that the SIU can do is conduct an investigation, a forensic analysis, prepare a report. The rest of the job needs to be done by other agencies. Because if that chain doesn't work to its logical end, where if you are found to have a prima facie case against somebody, they end up in court, a prosecution takes place, they're either found guilty or not guilty, and we deal with the rest. And I think it's that chain that we need to make a lot more efficient as well. The Director General will look at Mr. Kurnow's question because he likes cognac. And then you say, are there indications that labor will assist? Well, I've already given you an answer in asking other colleagues that it's not just about labor. It's about all of us being willing to assist. All of us recognizing the imperative for growth and increasing the potential of this economy and delivering on that potential. But more importantly, seizing the opportunities that we have. And part of our success story is going to be about whether we can persuade all stakeholders to work together in this area. The area that Mr. Ramathakane refers to, I'm not sure how much of elaboration he wants, but I think Mr. Moniak is here. This is the area where we're saying that for companies that want to invest in Africa, we are going to simplify exchange control provisions. But perhaps he can elaborate that for you and give you a little bit more detail. On the 16 billion rand under collection, the commissioner will tell you why he's under collecting and own up to it. Mr. Swart, 2 and 1. The CPO, I've just explained that to you, so I hope that's okay. Mr. Lees, the 2-year provision of plans. Mr. Brown will give you an explanation on that. The 10.4 billion rand reprioritization, Mr. Donaldson will explain how that happened. The 7 billion rand relief that was given, is it real relief? It is. We said that we fell slightly short of what would be total relief, but it is very clearly relief in this particular area. Dr. Luyenge, I admire his consistency. Every year after delivering the budget, we've had the same question from him on MIG and the sports facilities. And every year, Mr. Baum gives him the same answer, which he will repeat dutifully. The question of monitoring and evaluation, evaluating infrastructure programs capacity at a local level, the Deputy Minister will address that shortly. Mr. Ross, your questions on carbon, the Director General will look at that as well. The example of a construction company. The answer simply on that front is that if you look at the disaggregation that we show you, that there's some 400 odd billion rounds of expenditure that goes through provinces and municipalities, you'll find that many of those contracts are fairly small. They're not going to reach the big guys. So the contracts or tenders are still going out, but they operate in a very different way. And the second point I want to make is that big projects require a particular discipline in terms of following, let's call it a project cycle, a project processing cycle. Last year, if you remember, in the chapter on infrastructure, we showed you what that cycle looked like, from concept to pre-feasibility to feasibility and so on. And we give you some indications here of where the different projects might be that the PICC is actually coordinating. And some of those will take time to go through that process, but once they go through that process, I think you'll begin to see a fairly rapid unfolding of many of those projects. The DDSA is currently being reorientated precisely to do what you said, which is to focus on supporting municipalities and ensure that, in particular, the municipalities that don't have an adequate resource base or have challenges on delivery are the ones that are supported by the DDSA with the necessary expertise. Its role in SADC, by the way, is not new. This is the Development Bank of Southern Africa. So part of its mandate for many years has been to, in fact, invest in projects. I think we give you some indication of that in the speech as well, of the kind of involvement of the DBSA in various projects in the SADC region, and they're admirable ones in terms of the kind of contribution they make in the energy sector, in the transport sector, and other sectors to develop infrastructure within the region. Thank you for informing us about what SNP said, and we will certainly be interacting with them post the budget. Honorable Chabalala, the alignment of departmental programs with the NDP, Minister Jabane explained in the post-Sona briefing that his department, together with the Planning Commission, will be preparing a medium-term strategic framework. The framework will then act as the basis upon which the alignment that you speak of will take place as the process unfolds. So they have a fair amount of detail of how that would actually happen. Whether the rating agencies will be satisfied with the kind of fiscal path that we've outlined, well, our view would be that they should be satisfied. That doesn't mean that they will be satisfied. But it's for us as a country, as labor, business, and as government, to persuade the world that we will grow this economy, we will have the resources to pay our debt, and that you and I are reasonably honest people who, when we borrow money, will repay it. We owe R1 trillion to the world at this point in time, both in South Africa and elsewhere, and we've had a very, very good record over the last 10 or 15 years of doing so. And that record should speak for itself, which is something that we point out to the ratings agencies continuously. And the spending cuts that we've undertaken are undertaken in a way in which they don't damage any infrastructure project nor any social delivery processes as well. On the currency question, the Deputy Minister will look at that as well. So I've allocated all the rest of the questions, Chairperson. I hope I'll start with the Deputy Minister, the Director General, and other colleagues can then come in.
Okay, but I request that two officials, Kenneth and Tutawu, we would request that they be released, they respond first before they...
Mr. Brown notified me about his departure.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Minister, Deputy Minister, and members. On the MIG one, page 175 of the bill, we've actually included, firstly, we've indicated to both the Department of Corporate of Governance and Sports and Recreation the sentiments basically of the to raise at a time. And the Department of Sports basically entered into an MOU with the Department of Operative Governance as it relates to that. And we've included basically a part of the conditions of the Municipal Infrastructure Grant, basically the roles and responsibilities of the different departments. The Department of Sports and Recreation, basically they need to support the municipalities as it relates to the planning of that infrastructure. And then out of that, the funding basically will flow for each sports facility as it relates to that. On the planning for infrastructure, Honorable Lee, we needed to make trade-offs there because we have been transferring a big chunk of these funds or made allocations to provinces for 3 years on it, and we had continuous kind of understanding in a number basically of these grants, and had a reallocation system to be able to deal with that. That's the first thing. The second thing was the delivery and the quality of delivery has been actually a problem in a number of the provinces there. Then there was the problems with procurement and asset management, basically. And after evaluating all of that, we had an interaction basically with the treasuries and with the sectors and said, look, we will have to build a better capability for provinces to be able to manage the infrastructure programs. Then part of that is going to be, instead of giving you an indication of the money up front, rather go and do the legwork yourself and let's link the allocations to the legwork that you've done, basically. So the plan that they will then be providing will then inform the allocations there. So a province which is first on the door with a plan will get a bigger chunk of those specific allocations. So basically, we want to create an incentive for provinces actually to do the right stuff. And part of the prerequisites of that is going to be each province must have an asset management system actually in place. Because currently what we have is provinces are rolling out the infrastructure without proper maintenance plans in place and all of that. So we find that the school that's built today must be actually in 5-6 years' time, we need to rebuild it again at the end of the day. So that kind of long-term stuff that we want to, asset management systems that we want to see there. Secondly is, certainly a province needs to know now how the demographic picture basically look like. They need to know in 2-3 years' time, we will need schools in particular localities. So I don't think 2-3 years is too far away basically for them. So it actually provides them with a bit of they need to have the capability to understand those demographics and plan the infrastructure basically according to those kinds of demographics at the end of the day. Thirdly, we have rolled out the IDA program for a number of years. And there's a number of provinces where we find a bit of difficulty in modernizing the entire infrastructure delivery management system actually basically in there. So part of this is to say, go and make sure that you have a proper infrastructure delivery management system in place before you're going to get money at the end of the day there, which is actually in any case in line with what we want to achieve on the procurement side, so that we start to have quite a bit of a sense of standardization of piping, for example, in the building of schools at the end of the day, where we had a situation where one school, exactly the same specification, would cost 30 million rand in one school, it would cost 50 million in another school, in another province, for example. So part of that is to say, how do we standardize that? And we've got quite a bit of a set process that we've put in place to make sure that provinces are not shortchanged, who are actually in any case ready to roll out that infrastructure. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. I'm just sensitizing the members, the NCP members, must be in the chamber at 2 o'clock. We've got a session with every person. Question. So I just want to sensitize you. Deputy Minister?
Thanks, sir. Thank you very much, Chairperson, for the brief. And perhaps in being brief, let me just refer members to our infrastructure, to the budget review we've dedicated, as we've done in the past a few years now, dedicated the entire chapter to show our seriousness with the delivery of services, of infrastructure, to Chapter 7. And towards the end of that, we cover the critical areas, including the improvement of infrastructure delivery, and then on page 104, where we outline all the infrastructure projects and the amounts, and also the area of financing, the building capacity at all levels of government. And I would imagine that, serves as a good reference for members if there is anything that has not been clarified on infrastructure. In the interest of time, Chairperson, with regard to the question relating to the exchange rate, just to indicate that it depends on where we are. If you are you have an export led growth a weak currency works for you, but in our situation, I would imagine we need to find the right balance between what we import and what we export, because our biggest export commodity is actually oil, which fits into the price of oil, which fits into the price of
oil.
No, it's because the bells are ringing. I'm also a member of parliament, so just indicate you just need to find the right balance, which suits your unique situation in our case. Thanks. TG?
Any other response from the team?
thanks, Chairperson, honorable members, Minister and DM. On the question of the 10.4 billion, if the honorable member would add the total expenditure in for the 3 years in the MTBPS and then compare it to the expenditure for the 3 years in the budget review, you will get the number. You don't quite find them both in one book, I suspect. I don't think that we show that. Second, on the sort of debt issues and downgrades and so on, no one knows what will cause rating agencies to move one way or the other. You can make inferences. One point, being very aggressive with cutting expenditure as the UK was doing, ensured that they retained their rating, ensured that they borrowed a very low cost for some time, but at a certain point that fell out of favor because growth became the issue, and it became clear that absent growth, long-term fiscal sustainability of the UK was under threat, and hence Moody's downgraded them. But the other ratings have not changed their position in relation to that, but we don't know what they will do next. But insofar as ours is concerned, sometimes we confuse levels with chairs. What we tend to talk about when we say debt will peak before falling thereafter is debt as a share of GDP. Right? Because your GDP grows and at some point grows faster than your rate at which your debt grows, which is your numerator, at some point then you get that peak and tapering off. Whereas the level of debt never stops to increase for as long as you run a deficit. The point is that if you are running a deficit, you're sort of adding to your stock of debt on a net basis. And of course the dynamics of that might change from time to time, but in our case we aren't looking at reaching zero or running surpluses soon. But I'm saying that precisely. I mean, the two factors that have resulted in the shifting out, one it's growth slowing, which means that your denominator is small, revenues falling short, which means that what you end up adding to your total stock of debt is bigger than what you thought you would add previously. So the point about achieving higher rates of growth becomes important, but also the fact that we narrow the deficit quite fast, although there has been some deterioration this year, does sort of put us in a good position. But although there's been pushed upside, but we reach it quite soon. You saw from the confusion from the rating agencies, or let me say not confusion, but differences in the points of view, each one saying a different thing from the other one, even in instances where they rate us similarly in certain points. Insofar as the FIU allocations are concerned, the criminal justice sector is one of the functional groups that work very well from the point of view of budgeting. Very good example of because in their case they deal almost with the same client. If there has to be an investigation on me, and then that gets passed for arrest to the police, and then prosecution has got to be done,
by the Justice Department and then gets passed to Coroner. In other words, in their cases, the cluster is not artificial. So that's the sector where they are able to see with us where most resources are required, where the well-functioning nature of that system gets clogged, and therefore there is no risk that an effective institution wouldn't get resources when it needs them justifiably. So there's hardly any risk there. I mean, on the issue of inflation targeting and debt projection, the framework of inflation targeting is there. I don't think that we would fall into any temptation to want to say change the framework because it doesn't suit us from the point of view of our debt management and stuff like that. That would be close to tremendary. So the framework will play as important a role into the future, at least for now, as it's doing now. I hope that I've covered everything.
Thank you, DG. Mr. Makashile.
Thank you very much, Chair. Honorable Ramachakani asked the question of whether, you know, what the source of the revision down of revenue to 16 billion. 4 weeks in revenue collection is a long time. Remember, we are anticipating that revenue would be down by 60%, and I hope that will surprise our boss, 16 billion, sorry. 16 billion. 16 billion. We hope we'll, you know, we'll surprise our boss on the positive side. But lastly, the reason for the revision down is a muted growth in the third quarter, if you remember, of about 1.2 billion. So, you know, we can only collect the revenue that is in the economy. That's one of the reasons. And we also had a very bad second half when it comes to CIT, driven mainly by disruptions in the mining industry. In December alone, we dropped 4.6 billion because of the strikes and the disruption in the supply of minerals and products that the mining industry produces. And also we saw a lower than expected pay-as-you-earn because of some job losses at a higher level. There are about 60,000 job losses at high levels in the financial services and so on that were incurred. Salary increases in the second half of the year last year were not as high as they used to be in previous years. So our take from pay-as-you-earn were much lower than we anticipated. My second question, Honorable Ramachakani, on what are the trends on the voluntary disclosure program. The minister in his speech on page 22, you know, he pointed out what the previous GDP has grossed for us. There were 18,000 taxpayers that applied for GDP, for the voluntary disclosure program, and we have banked about 3 billion year to date. Coming from that program. And then on the 1st of October, as you know, the Tax Administration Act was enacted, and we have already had 300 taxpayers who have applied on this permanent new program. So there will not be a need anymore going forward, at least for voluntary disclosure, for us to have a special legislation passed for us to be able to give this provision. So for that permanent disclosure program, as the minister mentioned in his speech, 700 taxpayers have already come forward, and we are anticipating that by the end of March, we would have collected already 200 million out of this program. So the jury is out. I'm not sure how many would apply going forward, as you asked, but there is a tax gap, and they are uncompliant, and there are people that need to regulate their tax assets in our country. So we hope that it will take advantage of this provision. Thank you.
Thank you to the SAS Commissioner, Honourable Minister. If you want to do the closing remarks, I see that the Chief Whip is calling me from the HOC.
I'll be very quick, Chair. I was just going to respond to Honourable that on the Gateway to African forms, I think that we've set up obviously mechanisms to make it easier for South African companies to invest in Africa and other parts of a domestic base, which is how we prefer it. It's mutually beneficial, and similarly there are a range of other measures. It is an action out there, but it's a web of an action, I should add, so members need to download it to get it. I'm sure the minister goes to NEDLAC tomorrow, so we'll hear the response of all the social partners there to all the suggestions in the budget, I guess.
Thank you very much to all the members. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Minister. I refer the members to page 131 until about 138, the reply by the Minister and Treasury regarding our responses in terms of the MTBBS, etc. So just go over to those pages and you get the reply. Thank you, honourable members. These keys were found on the floor. The meeting stands adjourned. Thank you.